Just when you thought you'd heard of the sleaziest behavior imaginable on the part of Wall Street investment houses and stock analysts, the Wall Street Journal has dug up yet more, as charged in Monday's settlement with regulators. As the Journal reports today, regulators found that 5 of the 10 big firms they settled with made or received undisclosed payments for research. That is, firms weren't just getting reports from their own research departments that supported issues they were promoting. They would pay for research to be done by others. New York State Attorney General has been one of the most avid pursuers of the investment firms and their questionable practices. Elliot Spitzer joins us from New York City right now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You've said that the Wall Street investment bankers, and I quote right now, who claimed that they were uniquely capable of handling these conflicts of interest between banking and research, have proven they were uniquely incapable of handling them. Is the settlement that was formalized this week flawed to the extent that it keeps investment houses at all in the business of publishing research?
No, because what we did was think very long and hard about how we could create adequate buffers, separations, and proper incentives to ensure the integrity of research, and also to ensure that there would be research from totally independent sources that would reach the retail investor, the small investor whom I am most concerned about. So we reached an accord that we believe will restore integrity, and if it is enforced, the walls that we are creating here will be sufficient to ensure that integrity.
Professor John Coffey of Columbia Law School wrote this in the Financial Times this week. He wrote, "However strict the firewalls and informational partitions within the firm, the handwriting is still indelibly on the wall. If analysts wish to be subsidized, they have to create value for the provider of the subsidy." Of what value to an investment banker is a research department that's not plugging its own products and services?
Well, the value will not be to the investment banking side. It will be to the retail customer. And that is why what we have done in the agreement is articulate with great clarity what the elements and determinants of analyst compensation can be. And that means that the incentives that analysts have will be to be accurate, to be wise, to be good, so that investors and the marketplace will be able to judge analysts upon their value creation for investors, not the investment bankers.
Well, I'm not quite sure I follow, though. If I am the small investor who's dealing with Smith & Jones, an investment banker,
right.
I understand how I would get value from there being an analyst who's good and gives me good, sound advice. But if he's telling me things that don't serve Smith & Jones's investment business, how is it a value to them to keep him employed at all?
Because the value to them will be that he retains you as a retail customer. And over time, there are profits to be garnered by having a retail network. You will trade your shares, you will open your checking account, and the reason that you will remain with Smith & Jones is that the analyst recommends good stocks to you.
This is a concern that was raised by Professor James Cox of Duke Law School on this program. He said if an investment bank is looking at an acquisition, say in telecommunications, and its best expert on that sector is an analyst, then they would be very justifiably tempted to bring that analyst over the firewall to share his expertise. Then the problem would be, would they keep him there? That is, would people who do that once remain bankers forever and never go back to analysis?
If that happens, then that is certainly a business judgment that the investment house can make. But during the period during which the analyst is functioning as an investment banker, he certainly should not be issuing analytical reports to the general public.
But can he go back and forth over time?
There will have to be lengthy periods during which they do not go back and forth. But if an analyst chooses to become an investment banker, he certainly can do that, but you cannot be both simultaneously.
Talk to us a bit about your sense of the future right now. What's happened? Does the market take over now with pay coming from the right channels to the right people, regulators as deeply involved as ever in trying to correct what happened in years past, or what?
I believe that for the next year to 2 years, certainly we have cleansed the system sufficiently such that analytical work product will be honest. I think that the question that we are faced with is, will things begin over time to revert back to where they were during the ugly period of the bubble? Because those on the street will begin to believe that nobody's watching, which is why regulators will have to be vigilant. Management at these firms, if it is smart, will protect itself by being aggressive in monitoring what the analysts do. And I believe that for some period of time, it's safe to get back in the water.
Attorney General Spitzer, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Elliot Spitzer, the Attorney General of the State of New York, who spoke to us from New York City.